This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Dystopical. Dystopical is a debate and a reflection on what matters to queer women in the community. I'm Kat, and I'm joined tonight, of course, by Farine. Hi, Farine.
Good evening, everyone.
And why don't you tell us what's on tonight's show?
So on tonight's show, we'll be talking about experiences of mental distress in the queer community, what it is, what's out there for support, and what you can do to get involved. We have Sandy Jeffs and Indigo Daya on the show. So welcome, Sandy and Indigo. Hi, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
We're good.
So fantastic. Indigo, you coordinate Voices Vic, which is a new program out of Paran Mission. Mm-hmm. You provide support and a safe environment for people who hear voices. And what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, what does it mean to hear voices?
Good place to start. I guess traditionally this experience has been called auditory hallucinations by the psychiatric field. Mm-hmm. So it refers to hearing things that other people can't hear. We prefer to use the term hearing voices because it comes from the experience of the person having it. So as far as they're concerned, they are hearing voices. The term auditory hallucinations comes from the term of the point of view of a doctor.
All right.
Yeah.
And so you've just started a new program called Hearing Queer, mm-hmm. And that provides specific support to LGBTIQ individuals who hear voices, is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
And Sandy, you hear voices, have been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and I guess identify as a lesbian. So you share your story quite a lot, don't you? And you've written a book and some poetry and about this experience. Tell us more about that.
I have, Farine. Look, I've got a big mouth. I just flap it everywhere. I have lived with schizophrenia for 34 years, and I've heard voices for that entire time. And I do share my story a lot with people all over the place. And I have written several books of poetry, as well as my memoir, Flying With Paper Wings, mm-hmm. which came out late 2009. And in that book, I try to give a sense of the experience of what it's like to hear voices.
I understand that book was also shortlisted for the Age 2010 Book of the Year Awards, is that right?
Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Very, very exciting.
It was also named Sane Book of the Year, Sane
wow.
Australia, and it was also highly commended in the Human Rights Awards. So for a no-name little book from a small publisher, it's done pretty well. I'm really proud of it.
And you'll be reading us a part of your work later on, is that right?
I'll be reading a poem from Poems from the Madhouse, my first poetry book.
We're really looking forward to that a little bit later
yeah, no
on.
No worries.
So just to our listeners out there, we can't relate the views of all queer women because it's different for everyone. But Dystopical will always be from our point of view and will always try to be honest. So if your view, thoughts, or experiences are different to ours, or if you think what we're saying is just plain ridiculous, which it often is, with the exception
No one ever says that, though. And they only ever say that about things you say, Farine.
Thanks, Kat. Anyway, just to continue with my little spiel, if you'd like to get in touch with us today during the show, or any time really, you can text us at 0427JOY949, Facebook us at Dystopical, or email us at dear.dystopical@gmail.com. So we look forward to hearing from you. And just to a Lady Gaga song for a dear friend.
Fantastic.
And welcome back to Dystopical. That was Lady Gaga with Nothing Else I Can Say.
Yay.
A special shout out for our friend Max, also known in our household as Maxwell.
Or Maxi.
All right, so coming back to the topic at hand today, Indigo, can you tell us more about hearing voices and schizophrenia?
Sure. I guess hearing voices is seen as one of the most common and most identifiable symptoms of schizophrenia, mm-hmm. And a lot of people would have heard of that. We often see it represented in movies and TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess for most people it is an extremely frightening experience and a very overpowering experience, as Sandy will tell us about soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that the other aspect of it, I guess, is that most people who hear voices are very frightened to share with other people that they have that experience. We have a lot of negativity in the media. I know almost every time I tune into one of these you know, cops shows and murder shows, almost invariably the killer is someone with a mental health problem, which is very distressing for people who have the experience.
Yeah, I imagine. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that that the people who hear voices are one of the are far more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators of violence, and yet that's not actually the perception that the public has, and so people are likely to keep it as a secret, and the more isolated people are, the harder it is to recover and get support.
So you're talking about experiences of violence, you're talking about experiences of isolation. Mm. Sandy, you have lived experiences of hearing voices. What do you think? What have been your experiences?
Well, hearing voices is an extraordinary thing. You can't imagine, if you've never heard a voice, what it's like to hear voices. The voices I hear are persecutory, denigrating, just hounding me all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm the most evil person in the world. I should never have walked the world. I'm a whore. I'm a slut. I'm a trollop. It just goes on and on. And, you know, the last 3 weeks, for example, I've been lying in bed listening to my voices all night, hounding me. Now, the voices you hear are as real as me speaking to you.
Mm. It's not that's what I wanted to ask you, and I'm sorry if it's a really basic kind of amateur question, but it's like actually someone speaking to you.
Yeah, they sound external. So you look around the room to see where they are, but they're like me speaking to you or you speaking to me. That's how real they sound. And it's like this whole mass of voices in your head that you can't control. You can't walk out of a room, shut the door and leave them behind. Where you go, they go, because they're in your cranium. So the voices for me can be cajoling and pejorative and they can be random and rambling. You know, they can alter their substance and alter their content. They evolve as I evolve. You know, when as my life experience develops, they develop with it.
So you started hearing voices quite a number of years ago, is that right? And how did that evolve? How did you realize that it was something that was happening to you, that was different for you than other people, other people that you knew didn't necessarily have the same experience as you did?
Yeah, well, it was really strange because I was unraveling in 1976 as a young 23-year-old. And as they sort of are building over the year, and they sort of began mutedly and softly and insidiously. And by November that year, when I was diagnosed, when I finally told somebody I was hearing them, I couldn't say because the voices would say, "You're our secret. You can't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody about us. You know, you mustn't reveal us."
Wow, that's really insidious.
It's insidious. And I couldn't tell anybody I was hearing them because they threatened me that if I did, they would punish me or God would punish me.
And were they fully formed sort of characters? Were they people that accompanied you all the time?
Yeah. Yeah, they're characters. In the beginning, they were like, I think in the beginning they sounded like my mother and father.
Yeah.
But then they changed after that. And it's really funny because in the last couple of years, it's like they've done elocution because they now... They now speak to me in a posh accent, and they're like,
"Oh, how lovely!"
I know, it's wonderful. They would give a very
slightly more pleasant to listen to.
Well, they're not, but they'd give a very good poetry reading if they were doing it. But they are like actors on stage for me, projecting their lines.
Mm.
But they're just they're insidious, and in fact, they're like parasites because they feed on my brain and my inner world and my mind.
Mm.
Without my mind, they couldn't exist.
Mm.
So, in fact, they rely on my continued existence. I can't suicide because if I did, they would lose their existence. So they actually they depend on me living.
Mm.
They're like parents who berate their child endlessly. Mm. They're like the anti-conscience. They make me do things like withhold information from my friends.
Mm.
They make me lie to my friends.
Mm.
They make me not tell the truth. They make me do all sorts of things against my better judgment and against my conscience.
So what sort of effect has this had on your life over the years, and speaking both as just a woman and as a queer woman as well?
Yeah, my life has been damaged by this experience because it isn't just voices with schizophrenia for me. It's delusional thinking, it's visual hallucinations, the whole experience, the whole gamut. It's just this endless lost to psychosis that your life is, you know, you become unreaching and unreachable, and that's really terrible. As a lesbian, it was interesting because when I was diagnosed in 1976, homosexuality had only been taken out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association as a mental illness something like 3 years before I was diagnosed. So
wow.
I'm sure when I was first in hospital in Parkville, Parkville Psychiatric Unit, they saw my lesbianism as maybe part of my illness or a cause of my illness or ramification of my illness.
And at that time, what was the treatment that, you know, people were subjected to?
After psychosis?
Yeah.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Drugs, yeah, mainly drugs. There was some talking to from psychiatrists, and that changed over the years from psychiatrists talking to you to just medicating you.
Okay.
And there has been a change. But in the language around my sexuality changed too. They always had in my notes, because I got my notes from the hospitals, I actually retrieved them, I was in a lesbian menage a trois because I live with two women.
Mm.
Always a lesbian, always a lesbian. And that went on for years. But then in 1991, when I was discharged from Larundel, where I'd been for 3 months or something, they said in my notes that I was discharged to two supportive women who I'd had long-standing friendships with.
Mm.
So I'd taken the lesbian word out and had given it a much given my relationships a much better and positive aspect.
Mm.
And I don't know whether that was society changing, whether it was psychiatry changing, or what it was, but the language changed. And that was really interesting because,
it does seem that medically language has changed and consideration of the possibility of same-sex partnerships has been taken into more consideration in hospitals lately.
I hope so. But I had a psychiatrist for 27 years. I only dumped her 4 years ago. And she was homophobic.
Yeah.
You know, she never actually acknowledged my partners as my real carers, and she always forgot their names. After all that time, she could not remember their names. And I thought, this is crazy.
Which is a really good indication of how much importance she places on them, I suppose.
She didn't place any importance on them. So that was really strange, and I think I had to get away from that relationship. And the reason I couldn't get away from her was because in psychosis you're made so vulnerable by the illness, you're made so powerless that you cling on to anybody offering any semblance of hope and help.
Mm.
And that's what I did. I clung to the hand proffering medication.
Mm.
But she was homophobic and it was hopeless.
So Indigo, you prefer to use the term hearing voices over schizophrenia. And can you talk more about what the implications of that and what that actually means?
Sure. I guess, you know, initially as I was saying earlier, it's around respecting the lived experience of people who do hear voices or see visions or have unusual beliefs. And the approach that we use in our work is consumer developed, and consumer is a term we use to describe people with lived experience.
And you work at Paran Mission, right? And that is that a more progressive way of engaging with people than perhaps other sort of mental health systems around the city or the country? Or is this a progressive way? Do you think this is the way of the future?
I'm a consumer myself. I've been in psych hospitals, so I certainly hope it's a progressive way and a way of the future that mental health services are listening to the wisdom of those of us who've recovered and gotten a handle on our experience.
And do you find that this is more effective in terms of the rates of relapse or the way that people can continue their lives?
Definitely.
Look, anecdotally speaking.
Anecdotally, yes. And we are conducting research at the moment with Monash Alfred Psychiatry and La Trobe University to get solid evidence. But what we see is people improving their lives every day through these support groups.
Right.
Because the traditional approach for many years now, as Sandy said, has been medication.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, more of that medication. If that doesn't work, another medication.
Yeah.
And we're not anti-medication. We know that that's really helpful for a lot of people.
Great. That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah,
but it's on its own, I think it's not enough. We don't see people recovering on just medication. We see people being held and sedated and not really able to. Recovery is not just not being distressed. Recovery is being able to work and have relationships
and
do the things you want to do.
And do you have any understanding or any stats around how mental health sort of manifests in the queer community, and or whether, you know, there's higher rates or anything like that, just off the top of your head, anecdotally even?
I guess, and I don't have any actual stats, but I know that we've started working with Hearing Queer because voice hearers we've spoken to who identify as queer have said it's much harder to be queer and hear voices.
Yeah.
I know that some work that Lynn Hilliard has done at Arches has indicated that same-sex attracted youth kids are at risk of mental illness because of their difficulties with coming out, their difficulties with stigma, their difficulties with being not accepted for
Absolutely.
Who they are.
And I've seen certainly
a lot of stats about that. Yeah.
I've certainly seen stats that show higher levels of depression, higher levels of anxiety.
Suicide rates.
At that at the sort of lower end of the spectrum of, you know, sort of mental ill health, I suppose. Yeah. But I don't know about the other spectrum as well.
I just know that young kids in the teenage years who are trying to come to terms with their sexuality are at risk of depression and other mental illnesses.
Well, I suppose it's certainly harder having, you know, experiencing both, you know, mental ill health or whatever it is, and then also having to negotiate a harder life by being queer and all that sort of stuff.
Contribute to each
other. It compounds.
Well, it's a double whammy. You know, you're mad and you're gay. I mean, you know, what sort of
nothing is working out for you.
Nothing's working out. How far down the ladder can you go?
Look, we're going to cut to a song now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Hearing Queer program.
And welcome back to Dystopical. So the first song we just played there was Cyndi Lauper's I Drove All Night, and it made me really, really happy because Celine Dion put out this horrible version a few years ago and totally tainted it. But Cyndi Lauper is bringing back the love, so I like that. And the next song we played there was Lost in the World by Kanye West, and it's off his new CD.
I have to say, I don't usually like Kanye, but that was really good.
Kanye is like God.
I just think he's a bit of a prat.
Oh, he is, but he's a talented prat. And I particularly like the name of his CD, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Sounds like my psychosis.
Sounds like my life.
So, Sandy, we just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about sort of your experiences being queer and, I guess, living with voices and how that's been for you over the years. Has the support gotten better? What's it been like in terms of your relationships and carers and all that sort of stuff?
And tying into that, we actually got an SMS in from a listener saying, great show, guys. Homosexuality is not a mental illness.
Oh, well spoken.
Yeah, sorry. I'll try that again. Great show, guys. Homosexuality is not a mental illness. Do you agree? And I guess, Sandy, did you want to respond to that?
Well, I've already said that it was taken out of the DSM, thank God, because we've gone from the days of slamming people in an asylum because they're gay or, you know, they're faggots or they're poofs or whatever they were called. But, you know, having said that and having also talked about the change of language around my sexuality, even in the last hospitalisation I had at a clinic in Melbourne, my partners who I've lived with for 37 years, my dear girlfriends, you know, they were still seen as just friends like my other friends. They weren't sort of distinguished by the nursing staff as significant. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, we're living in an enlightened time and we thought we were, but even then they weren't, you know, given the due respect that they ought to have been given, I don't think, which is really good. But, you know, having said that as well, my doctor, my psychiatrist who I see regularly, has no qualms in ringing them when she thinks I'm not well. You know, she has no qualms. She'll just ring them because she knows that I'm not unwell. They need to know. And she's good. She's great. So she isn't homophobic at all, this doctor. She's fantastic.
And I know that you can't necessarily speak for the people you're in a relationship with, but what's been their experience when you've been unwell and when you've been in hospital? How have they been treated when they've come to visit you or support you?
Well, the days of Larundel, many years ago, they were treated abominably. It was appalling. You know, they weren't recognised, they weren't sometimes even given time to see me. You know, they were just negated in the whole thing. As I said, in the most recent time, they were still negated, but at least the doctor recognises them. You know, she does. She's good about them. But I think, you know, it's also hard actually acknowledging your sexuality and being in that vulnerable position of being mentally ill and having a very variant sexuality is not easy for people because there's a shame for, you know, there's a shame for being mentally ill, and society shames you for being gay, and so the double whammy doesn't help your self-esteem sometimes or your capacity to announce who you are and be proud of who you are. So I try and actually reclaim language. I call myself mad and I call myself a dyke.
And you've been using the written word, I guess, to express yourself over the years.
I have, yeah.
And what sort of things do you write about?
My first book was poems all about being nutty.
Mm-hmm.
My second book were poems all about my dysfunctional family. Mm-hmm. My next book was about playing midweek ladies tennis and the trials and tribulations of playing midweek ladies tennis. And my memoirs about my life.
Right.
Yeah.
And you want to read us a piece today, is that right?
Yeah, I read a poem about hearing voices.
That'd be great.
That would be great.
That complex, that endlessly complex relationship you have with your voices, it's not an easy thing to describe.
Mm.
And it's a complex relationship because they're your voices, it's your experience, they're in your head. You know, why is it my womb or why is it my head? Mm. It's called Whisper, My Friend. Whisper, my friend, you are the only reality I have. When you beckon, I cannot ignore your commands. You give me power and a purpose in our secure world of shared secrets. Whisper, my friend, tell me your stories. Tell me in your charming, seductive voice. You are my creator and my lover. You belong to me and no one else, and I belong to you alone. Together we resist the outside world and toil to make a harmony of disorder. How you move my senses with your power. They try to take you away from me because of the secrets we share. But only we know the truth of us. Only we can communicate with honesty. No one will ever separate our beings because we are each other. Even though there were times when you betrayed me and told false and deceitful lies, I forgave you because you always forgive me. Whisper, my friend, I have no choice. I'm entwined in your briar arms that caress my withered soul.
Thank you. I don't know if I want to talk that much after this, so we're going to go to a song, and when we come back, we'll talk to Indigo more about the program that we're running, that they're running right now at Paran Mission.
Great.
Welcome back to Dystopical. Two of my favorite artists of all time. One because I think she has a great voice, and the other one just because I have a crush on her, really.
And who chooses the music, Farin?
I do. So the first song we were listening to there was by Jade Starr, member of Dread Circus.
Did I tell you that I saw her at Pride last week?
Oh, my God, I'm blushing already.
I was going to text you and say, by the way, Jade Starr's here.
I'm
but I thought you
fan.
Might have died.
I would have. And then Katie Lang with The Joker. Wonderful, wonderful voice and great song as well. So and now back to Sandy, that was, thank you very much for sharing your poetry with us. Do you want to maybe tell us a little bit about when you wrote that and what was going on in your head then and why you needed to get it down on paper?
Yeah, I wrote it quite a long time ago actually, and I remember Dori Previn wrote a song and she mentioned her friend, she mentioned the whisper. And whisper was the voice she was hearing in her head, and I thought, whisper, that's interesting, because my voice sometimes whispers to me too. And then I thought, well, whisper my friend, because it was like my friend as well. Because it's like when you're psychotic, sometimes your voices are your friends.
Right.
Because when you're so isolated and so lonely, they're in there clattering, and even though they're persecuting you, they're sort of, you have a
familiar.
Yeah, familiar, and you have a relationship with them. So I think that poem is just trying to tease out that really awful, awful, insidious relationship you have with this awful, awful, vile content of your mind. The mind's the loneliest place in the world. And then when it's filled with voices, it's even lonelier. And so the poem was trying to tease out that relationship. My friends hate it, by the way. They hate that poem because they think that I'm playing up to the voices and being seduced by them and trying to seduce them myself. So, in fact, it's a poem that's, for my friends, not a nice experience, but for me it's an important poem because I just want to understand what's going on in my mind and I want to understand the voices, and so that was the best way I could try and do it. And poetry is my way of processing my life, my madness, and it's been, you know, but I have to say my poetic license has been revoked.
Tell us more.
What does that even mean?
I don't write poetry anymore.
Why not?
I haven't done it for 5 years. Since writing my memoir, I haven't written any poetry.
What do you write now?
Prose. I'm writing a book about Larundel, actually, a social history of Larundel, which is an old psych hospital. But it's like my poetic license has been revoked. I need to go to the post office and fill in a form to get my license back.
Probably pay
$29.95. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I need
to get my license back. Plus GST, yeah. So clearly writing for you has been a really great outlet. Indigo, I guess other people who don't have that outlet seek other sort of sources of support. And you and the Prior Mission have recently started Hearing Queer. Can you tell us more about that? So what is it? What do you do? Who it's for?
Absolutely. And yeah, look, that loneliness and isolation that Sandy's talking about is incredibly common. Hearing voices is a very isolating experience. And that isolation makes it really difficult to recover. So our core activity is setting up peer support groups, and these are safe places where we're not trying to get rid of people's voices. We're trying to provide a place for people to explore them, understand them, work out how to live with them, maybe challenge them a bit. and just be, you know, a lot of people say, I feel like I'm amongst my family in this group, or I'm with my tribe. It's safe to talk about really strange things here.
And you had your first meeting yesterday or a couple of days ago, is that right?
Today, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And look, we're keen to do a lot more. So today's was our first hearing queer group. So this is for voice hearers who identify as queer. And we're very aware that we've had a number of people tell us this is almost like coming out of the closet a second time.
Wow.
That's
full on.
It's a big thing. Yeah. And so we're aware that if people are having this experience and it might seem a bit much to come along to a group, we do have the opportunity to give us some feedback on our website, which is listed on Facebook.
Yep.
And let us know what other ways can we provide support for you. For example, we're toying with the idea of an online discussion group.
Right.
So it's anonymous, but you can still talk about the experience.
So this is an online survey on your website at the moment to get consumers to tell you about what kind of services and what kind of support they're looking for. Is
absolutely.
That right?
Absolutely.
Great. And we have a link from our Facebook page. So if you just go to Dystopical's Facebook page, there's a whole sort of list of links to Voices Vic and how to get to Hearing Queer from there. And also to how to get access to Sandy Jeff's book, Flying with Paper Wings. So, ladies, we usually have a sort of agony aunt column on the show that we call Dear Dystopical, and our question today is, how do you support loved ones who are going through this experience?
My God. For me, what I need from my friends is support, love, and the sense that I don't lose hope. I think to lose hope is the worst outcome of having a mental illness. To lose hope means you can't get out of bed, you can't do anything, there's nothing to get up for, there's no job, there's no future, there's nothing, you know. So for your friends to keep giving you hope is really important, and I need to have a sense of hope to keep going. And I think with love and, you know, to have tough love too. You know, you've got to have people telling you, well, this is not appropriate to do. This is not an appropriate thing to say. When you are not quite well and doing inappropriate things, this is not on. So tough love's really important. But
as well as the other kind of love.
Exactly.
All of it. All of the love.
But I think the most crucial thing is that you can't deal with your mental illness alone, and the enemy is not your friends, it's the illness. And and to have hope, you've got to have hope to get through.
Thank you. Yeah, that's beautiful.
I'd agree with that. The hope is critical. And I guess some other advice I'd offer to family members and friends will be, don't be afraid to talk to people about this experience. It's really common that we see people, I guess, around all sorts of uncomfortable issues, just shut down and not talk. The best thing you can do is to provide a receptive, supportive opportunity for people to talk about what they're going through.
So just be open to listening as well.
Absolutely.
But not to your voices.
Thank you. So thank you, ladies, both of you, very much for being on the show today. We've had some really great feedback.
Yeah, you've been both interesting and inspirational.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes. A rare combination. We love to have you on the show. Thank you. Thank you both again very much.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.